නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස සම්මා සමාධි ආනන්ද භාවිතෝ බහුලීකතෝ රාග විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති දෝස විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති ඉති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Janussoni Brahmana Sutta, which is coming available in the Sangyutta Nikaya, Magga Sangyutta. Actually, Magga Sangyutta contains many suttas which are dealing with the Noble Eightfold Path. So, this sutta also gives few aspects about the Noble Eightfold Path. The incident was, there was one Brahmin called Janussoni, and he was going through the city of Sravasti. And at that time, Venerable Ananda also was in the arms round. And this Janussoni Brahmin actually was wearing all white color clothing. And again, his chariot was completely white color. And the horses used are also white color. So likewise, this complete chariot and himself is white color. So people have noticed this. And as a result, they made a comment that this is like a divine vehicle. So, and they were quite appreciating it, and they were quite surprised to see this kind of a vehicle. And Venerable Ananda too has noticed this, and then after returning from the alms round, he mentioned this to the Buddha, and he made a special request. So he asked, is it possible for the Buddha to give an analogy between this kind of a divine vehicle according to the Dhamma? And then Buddha mentioned, yes, I can. And that is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So divine vehicle, Brahma vehicle, Dhamma vehicle, and the unsurpassed vehicle used in the battle of the defilements are nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So therefore, we were discussing this Noble Eightfold Path now for several weeks. And we have already discussed almost seven factors, and we are now discussing the eighth factor, that is the Samma Samadhi, or the right concentration. As you all know, there are three trainings. The whole Noble Eightfold Path is divided into three Sikha, or three trainings: Sila Sikha, Samadhi Sikha, Panya Sikha. It starts with the Panya Sikha here, consisting of two factors, Samma Ditti and Samma Sankappa, and then there are other three factors belonging to the Sila Sikha, the morality, that is Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, and Samma Ajiva. And then we come across the concentration training, that is the Samadhi Sikha, which consists of three factors, namely right effort, Samma Vayama, right mindfulness, Samma Sati, right concentration, that is the Samma Samadhi. So we were discussing Samma Samadhi, and last time we discussed some aspects of Samma Samadhi, and there we take one sutta called Samma Samadhi Sutta, where Buddha mentioned that the Samma Samadhi has basically one aspect, that is, if you are developing Samma Samadhi more inclined towards the Nibbana, then you have to develop in one way. On the other hand, there are another four types of Samma Samadhi, where Buddha mentioned four categories, or four types, and that is available in Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, available in Anguttara Nikaya. There he gives two types fairly related to the Samatha practice, and another two types fairly related to the Vipassana practice. So the first type is called Samadhi Bhavana Bhavita Bahuli Kata Ditta Dhamma Sukaviharaya Sangvata. There's one category of concentration practice. If one develops that, so that may lead to a very blissful state, blissful, pleasant abiding in this very life. So that is basically the Samatha practice. Those are the jhanas, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So those are the jhana practices. And if one want, even go can go even beyond that. So that is the even the immaterial jhana, and those are also come into the same category where one develops high concentration, and when one is absorbed to such concentration, one may experience a very blissful state. And Buddha accepts that, and he say it is possible to have very blissful state in this very life if one practices according to this. Now there's another category if one develops this further, so that is particularly the fourth jhana, to the abhijna level, so to some other sort of psychic power levels, so then one would be able to have clairvoyance where one can see various things which the typical people can't see. So during the night they also can see, they can penetrate a wall and such kind of a thing. So likewise there are some special powers can be gained if one develops the fourth jhana to the level of dibbacakku or clairvoyance, where one can see various things. So those two types of samadhi actually we can say are samatha practices, concentration practices, tranquility practices. Now today we can discuss the other two, since we have already covered the previous ones in the previous week. So today we can cover the other two. Those are more relevant to the vipassana practice. So Buddha mentioned samadhi bhavana bhavita bahuli kata sati sampajanyaya sangvattati. So there is another third type of concentration. If one develops that, then one may skillful in the mindfulness and clear comprehension. Now, as you all know, so when we are developing mindfulness, first of all, say we are selecting a meditation object like breath, and we are trying to be mindful on the breath. So we sit cross-legged, and we select a suitable place, and then we keep our eyes gently closed and quite settled, and then we are trying to take our attention to the body. So once the attention has properly established within the body, now we can carefully observe the breathing process. When the in-breath happens, so we are carefully observing it as in-breath. When out-breath happens, we carefully observe it as out-breath. So likewise, in-breath, out-breath. So likewise, we can continuously observe this process, and as a result of that, the mindfulness improves. So once the mindfulness has improved, now we should not stop there. We now have to connect clear comprehension into the process. So this clear comprehension at the beginning we have to initiate, otherwise mind may simply satisfy with the bare attention. Simple mindfulness. So on top of mindfulness, once the mindfulness is well established, now we have to start investigating the object. Say here the breath has to be well investigated, whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm or whether it is cool, from which nostril it is going in, from which nostril it is going out, where it is touching, and what are the element characteristics that we can recognize in the breath. So likewise, we have to carefully examine the breath, so that leads to the clear comprehension. So not only the breath, so if you are selecting rising and falling of the abdomen, it's the same situation, you can observe rising and falling. And once the mindfulness has well established, you have to examine the rising and falling, so that you are clearly knowing the various characteristics available in the rising and falling. If you are practicing Vedanupassana, similarly, say once the mindfulness is well established on various types of feelings, there also you have to investigate the feelings. Say if it is a pleasurable feeling, so you are examining it. And then you may get a better idea about the pleasurable feeling. At the beginning we simply have established mindfulness, but we didn't know much about the behavior of the pleasurable feeling. But when we start to examine the pleasurable feeling, then we can analyze and we can recognize various subtle aspects of the pleasurable feelings. Similarly, the painful feelings. Painful feelings also at the beginning, so we sometimes hate it, we want to get rid of it. So likewise, we are struggling at the beginning with the painful feelings. But now, as a careful examining process, so we have to carefully examine, observe or investigate so that we can recognize various subtle aspects of the painful feeling. Similarly, we have to examine the equanimous feelings. So one is not ignorant about equanimous feelings, rather one is carefully observing, analyzing or mindfully examining. So as a result of that, you are able to recognize various aspects of the equanimous feelings. Now, if you are continuing like this, then you can recognize various thoughts as well. So you can be mindful about the various mind states, you can be mindful about various emotions, you can be mindful about various thoughts. So in this section, actually Buddha mentioned how one becomes samadhi bhavana bhavita bahuli kata sati sampajanyaya sangvattati. So what is the way that one has to develop the concentration so that it will develop mindfulness and clear comprehension? So there Buddha mentioned, ida bhikkhave bhikkhuno vidita vedana uppajjanti vidita upatthanti vidita abbattam gacchanti. So he starts with the feelings, and there he mentioned, so when he is carefully examining, he can recognize the various types of feelings, how they are arising, how they are remaining or persisting, and how they are fading away. And similarly, he mentioned vidita sanya upajjanti vidita upatthanti vidita abbattam gacchanti. Various types of perceptions are arising, various types of signs, marks are arising in the mind, and he recognizes them very well. And once they are there, he also aware of it. And once they fade away, that also he is very well aware. Similarly, Buddha mentioned vidita vitakka upajjanti vidita upatthanti vidita abbattam gacchanti. Now there are various thoughts arising in the mind, and that also this person can clearly recognize. It could be a lustful thought, and he can clearly recognize it. It could be a hateful thought, he can clearly recognize it. It could be a kind of entangling thought, it can also clearly recognized. It may be a kind of jealous thought, that also can be recognized. It could be a kind of a loving kindness thought, that also can be recognized. So basically the Chittanupassana and the Vedananupassana is fairly mentioned here. So the point here is that without his knowledge, none of these feelings, perceptions, signs, thoughts can be arisen. So he is fairly having continuous mindfulness, and without his knowledge, so these kinds of phenomena cannot arise. So he is very well aware when a feeling is arising, either it is in the body or in the mind, he is very well aware. When there are various perceptions arise, that too he is very well aware. When there are various thoughts arising, that too he is very well aware. Now this is how one is further developing mindfulness and clear comprehension. So when one has this kind of a investigative approach, then one would be able to further enhance his mindfulness and clear comprehension. Actually, it will lead to the development of the wisdom. So now the wisdom is sharpening, and one can more go towards the deep vipassana or further careful examination of various phenomena. And that is Buddha mentioned as the fourth type of samadhi. Atti bhikkhave samadhi bhavana bhavita bahuli kata asavanam khayaya sangvattati. Buddha mentioned there is another fourth category of concentration development. So if one develops, cultivates that, it will lead to the eradication of influxes, asavas. Now he explains that like this. Ida bhikkhave bhikkhu panchupadana khandesu udayabhyanupassi viharati. ඉති රූපං ඉති රූපස්ස සමුදයෝ ඉති රූපස්ස අත්තංගමෝ ඉති වේදනාය සමුදයෝ ඉති වේදනාය අත්තංගමෝ. So likewise he is explaining about all four, five kinds of aggregates or clinging aggregates. Now if you can remember Dhammanupassana, so there we discuss about the aggregates. So the whole experience one can divide into five categories, five groups, five aggregates. Namely, the first category is called the Rupakkhanda, where it is talking about the material aspects, our body and the various sounds, sights, smells, tastes, tactile sensations. The whole physical world comes under this. Then we are leading to the feeling aggregate, where different types of feelings are there. Throughout the day, we are subjected to various kinds of feelings, namely the pleasurable feelings, painful feelings and equanimous feelings mainly. And those are coming under the feelings aggregate. And then we have various kinds of perceptions, various marks, signs, which we store in our mind. And again, we predict to the future, and again we go through in the present moment. So whenever we see something, so there are various marks, signs that we are using in order to recognize. Similarly, when we are hearing something, so various aspects are there in the sounds, various marks are there using which we are able to distinctly recognize. Similarly, we are able to say feelings we recognize, and then the sanya, the perceptions, and then we are coming to the sankhara. Now sankhara is little complicated sometimes. Actually, whenever we are maintaining kind of a willful action, so that indicates that we have an intention. So intention is one of the main sankhara fabrication we do. So always we want to do something, we want to take some action. So as a result of that, we always occupy our mind with some sort of a sankhara, some sort of a fabrication, some sort of a formation. Say for example, we see someone and we immediately recognize him, and as a result of that, suppose he's a lovable person, then we may feel kind of an affection. We may feel some loving feeling. So we couldn't stop at the sight. We actually taken it to the loving feeling. If we have seen someone we don't like, then we couldn't stop at the sight. Rather, we take it to the level of kind of a hate. So I don't want to see him. I don't like to see him. I want to get rid of him. I hate him. So likewise, now you are starting the opposite, where you start to have kind of a negative feeling about that person. And you may even start to think about that person negatively. And now thoughts are going on and on in the mind. So these are all fabrications coming under the sankhara aggregate. So the sankhara aggregate is therefore fairly wide, broad. Various kinds of mental attitudes, mental moods and likes and dislikes, wholesome and unwholesome, all are in the sankhara, in the fabrications. Now that is coming under the sankhara khanda, or the fabrications of formations aggregate. And using our various senses, we have six main senses: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. And using which we actually deal with the outside world. The first five actually deal with the outside world. The last one, the mind, deals with the outside and inside world. Now, say for example, when we are seeing something, so the eye consciousness arises. Hearing something, ear consciousness arises. Smelling something, nose consciousness arises. So likewise, so various types of consciousness arise. Once the respective object and the corresponding faculty comes together, eye with sights, ears with sounds, nose with the smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tactile sensations, and mind with mind objects. So when these are coming together, then the corresponding consciousness arises. Now various types of consciousness are there. Now, depending on the situation, different types of consciousness arise. And it may be intense or it may be weak. So likewise, this is also an aggregate where we are recognizing various different types of objects, and accordingly millions types of consciousness arise. So therefore, this consciousness aggregate also come into the being. Now, any of our experience can be divided into these five aggregates so that we can clearly understand the experience. So typical notion in ourselves is that I am looking, I am hearing, I am tasting, I am going through some pleasure, I am not happy, or I am happy, I am suffering. So likewise, so we are inserting this I-ness, inserting an ego, and then we interpret the experience. Now this is in a way kind of a root problem we all have. So therefore, in order to analyze this whole experience, Buddha gave these five aggregates. And all the experience can be divided into these five aggregates as I have explained. Suppose, say for example, we are eating a delicious ice cream. Now, if we got the rupakkhanda, the materiality aggregate, so there we can see taste is there, and then the food is there, that is the hard part, the ice cream. So that is the hard or soft, and then the say cold, taste, and all these things are material aspects. And our body is involved, and that also is material aspect. So this is the material aspect of the rupakkhanda. And when we are eating the ice cream, so we go through various feelings, mostly the pleasurable feelings. And those pleasurable feelings, it could be bodily pleasurable feelings, and it could be even mental pleasurable feelings, somanassa. And so therefore, those are coming under the feeling aggregate. And when we are seeing the ice cream, so it may be the color, it may be the shape, and it may be the smell. So we have recognized those. We already had ice cream some time ago, and we have some sort of memory about it. So that is based on that we actually have selected this one as well, because we have enjoyed this kind of ice cream before as well. So that is why we have selected this special type, this brand. And all these are actually the signs, perceptions we have. So this brand is good. So I have to enjoy this brand. I have to select this brand. So likewise, oh, this could be nutritious. So we have different types of perceptions, different signs, marks pertaining to the ice cream. So that is coming under the perceptions aggregate. Now, while enjoying the ice cream, now we have various kinds of perceptions, and that actually leads to some fabrications as well. Say you are thinking having it more, or buying more, and storing on your refrigerator, and you are planning, and now you are intentionally eating. So this intention, and you want to tell someone also to buy the same type of or the same brand of ice cream so that it is pretty good. So you are recommending it. And you may be thinking that how you are going to buy this kind of ice cream to your children and to offer them, and they may also start to enjoy it. So you can go on and on into even proliferation while eating. So those comes under the fabrications or the sankhara aggregate, the formations aggregate. Now in this situation, mainly the taste is involved, so therefore the tongue consciousness is working, and then the smell is working also there, so the nose consciousness also working, and you are recognizing the coldness or coolness of the ice cream, so the body consciousness is also involved, and you are thinking about it, you are enjoying it, so therefore the mind consciousness is also involved, you are thinking as well. So there are various types of consciousness also involved. So that is coming under the consciousness aggregate. So likewise, each and every experience that we go through, we can categorize into these five aggregates. Now, when we are able to categorize like this, actually we then dissolve the I-ness. We then dissolve the ego. Because in order for ego to arise, so we have to grasp any of these aggregates. Either one or many of these aggregates have to be grasped in order to make I, in order to create an I, an ego. But when you are able to properly analyze, as I mentioned, any kind of an experience, then you will understand, okay, which part I have taken as the I. Is it the materiality? Is it the feeling? Is it the perceptions? Is it the fabrications or the other consciousness? So you can check, you can ask from yourself. So basically, among these five aggregates, one of them sometimes come to the front. So that is what mostly we take as I, or I want, or I belong. Say for example, now you are enjoying the ice cream and it is so delicious. So we are more prone to get feeling as I. So we are more attached to the feeling. So therefore, the feeling aggregate become a clinging aggregate. Now we are clinging to feelings. So each and every aggregate therefore becomes clinging aggregates. So we can cling to the rupa, materiality, form, shape, etc., color, and we can cling to the feelings, we can cling to the perceptions, we can cling to the fabrications, formations, and again we can cling to the knowing, consciousness. So in a given situation, we don't know we don't know to which the mind go and pick and cling, but we can, once it is going on, we can actually recognize. We can be mindful about the clinging. Assume that you had experienced some sort of a non-clinging nature of the mind. You have developed vipassana, you have developed mindfulness, satipatthana. So you are able to, suppose, establish yourself on a non-clinging nature. In other terms, you are not established anywhere. Not in the rupa, not in the sadda, not in the sights, not in the sounds, not in the smells, taste, tactile sensations or thoughts. On such situations, say you can say the mind is fairly free. Not clinging, not bound to anything. But after a while, say when you are enjoying the ice cream, unfortunately now the mind is involved, again get entangled, for example, with the feelings. Now mind has grasped various pleasurable feelings. So it has come to the front. Now the mindfulness will show you, okay, now mind has grasped the feelings. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, so whenever various aggregates are present, especially to which one the mind has grasped, so you can recognize. Iti rupam, iti rupasa samudayo, iti rupasa attangamu. Iti vedanaya samudayo, iti vedanaya attangamu. So here, for example, these are the feelings, here the pleasurable feelings, so you can recognize. And again, you can recognize, so this is how it is arising. Various types of feelings are arising. While you are eating the ice cream, so every time the ice cream touches the tongue, there's a pleasurable feeling arising. So as you are enjoying it, pleasurable feelings are arising. So the arising of these pleasurable feelings you can recognize. And after a moment, they start to disappear. They can't remain forever. They quickly disappear. So you recognize this disappearing aspect as well. So similarly, the perception, similarly the formations and consciousness, you can understand. So whenever mind is going through various kinds of experiences, so likewise we can divide that experience into five aggregates. There we can recognize how mind is grasping. Actually, we don't need to immediately know all the five aggregates, it would be difficult. But at least one aggregate to which the mind is heavily grasped, heavily attached, that we can recognize. So here I have taken the example of the feeling aggregates. Ice cream was so delicious, so the mind was attached to that feeling, delicious feeling. Another example is, suppose that you are drinking a hot tea. So at that time, if it is so hot, so immediately you get a, say, the you may recognize the heat. So it may comes under the, say, the materiality aggregate, or you may feel painful, that then comes to the feeling aggregate. And sometimes you start to hate the person who has offered the tea. So then it comes to the then the hate becomes more prominent. Then it comes to the fabrications or the formations aggregate. So likewise, so we can recognize the most prominent aggregate at on which we have attached. So once we recognize it, so if we have enough mindfulness, so we don't need to continue that grasping. So the mindfulness will show us, okay, the fellow has now gone and attached to something. So the wise action here is to let it go. Without continuing the attachment, without continuing holding, without grasping, so one has to release the grasp. Now the mind is again coming or returning back to that emptiness. So likewise, again and again, we have to do this process. So during the daily activities, so we may come across various types of clinging time to time and grasping time to time. And at that time, the mindfulness will tell us, mindfulness will show us, we have lost the freedom, the mind has lost its freedom. Again, mind has gone and attached with something. So that grasping nature, the attached nature, the mindfulness will reveal. It will show us. At that time, we have to apply clear comprehension, wisdom, and then we have to release the mind. Again, we are returning back to the emptiness. So likewise, this process has to be practiced. So Buddha mentioned, if one practices this, Hida bhikkave bhikkhu panchupadana khandesu udayabhyanu passi viharati. So you understand, okay, these clinging aggregates are arising, and the mindfulness is showing that, and so once we apply the mindfulness, so the clinging disappear, and as a result the aggregate also sort of aggregates are there, but the grasping is not there. Ice cream is there. Now the feelings are also available. You have recognized the mind has grasped. You are mindful about it, and you have let it go, that grasping. Now still the pleasurable feeling is going on, but you can keep the mind empty. So this is an interesting fact. So basically this doesn't mean that you can't experience the pleasurable feeling. You can experience the pleasurable feeling without grasping. So if the mind is grasping the pleasurable feeling, then mind feel heavy. Your mind even feel elated when it comes to the pleasurable feelings. On the other hand, if the mind is grasping the painful feelings, you might become depressed or hateful or quite negative. On the other hand, if you are not grasping, painful feelings may be there, pleasurable feelings may be there, but you are not grasping. So this feature actually has explained in the Dhamma. I can refer a small sutta where one Brahmin was examining the Buddha's behavior for several months. So he is actually following the Buddha in secret. It's actually Buddha may know, but anyway, this person called Subha. So he thought that because his teacher gave him an assignment. So like today, teachers are giving assignments to the students. So that time also, one of the Brahmin teacher, has given his student assignment, so that is nothing but to examine the Buddha and to check whether said qualities are there with the Buddha. because there is a very good reputation spreading about the Buddha, and so the other Brahmins were so somewhat jealous about it, and they actually doubt about it. And so one such Brahmin sent one of his student to investigate the Buddha. Now this fellow actually going after the Buddha in secret, following and observing in distant, so that he can recognize some sort of a mistake, slightest mistake if Buddha does, so that he can note, he can record. So he is therefore quite carefully examining how Buddha is going through each and every daily activities. And then he submit a report, and in that report it is mentioned, rasa pati sangvedi cha bhagava nocha rasa raga pati sangvedi. So likewise, there are many points mentioned, so I am referring one point here. So he mentioned that while having alms, while Buddha is having his meals, so Buddha too can see, Buddha too go through the pleasurable feelings, but there is no lust or greed towards that pleasurable feeling. So this is a special point that he has noticed. So various pleasurable feelings are there. Buddha too go through, Buddha too experience them, but there is no grasping. So if a Vipassana practitioner, so he too can come to the same level. So there are various kinds of pleasurable feelings. They are there, but your mind is not involved with them. Your mind is not talking about them. And your mind is not grasping them. Similarly, there may be various kinds of painful feelings. Your mind is not sort of hating them, or it is not agitated. You can observe them in distant. So that is what we discuss when we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta. So this distant observation, you are not making it mine. So you can have this distant observation. So if one do that, so then the grasping can be reduced. And here Buddha mentioned, so as we are continuing, so we are not promoting the habitual tendencies, latent tendencies. As a result of that, so those latent tendencies become weaker and weaker. As a result of that, the influxes started to fade away. Now, in order to overcome influxes, there are many methods are explained. If you can remember in the Sabbasava Sutta, that is the very first sutta we have taken in this sutta teaching session. So there are seven strategies Buddha has mentioned. Now here actually, related to the Vipassana practice, Buddha has mentioned, where one recognize how the mind go and grasp various aggregates. And if one notice that, one can release the mind, free the mind, and then maintain the mind in emptiness. Now we have discussed four types of concentrations, and in order to get another perspective about this subject, we have to understand various kinds of defilements related to the practice. So we sometimes call them as upaklesa, various defilements. Now we have discussed different types of concentration practices, and again now we have discussed different types of Vipassana concentration practices, and both can have defilements as well. So that is where we have to be careful. Say for example, if one has very good concentration, one can be attached to that. Say you are practicing Samatha and you are able to get on to some absorption, say the first jhana, and then it was so blissful, and today also you are sitting in order to attain the first jhana. So tomorrow also you are sitting in order to attain first jhana. So this attainment become your goal, and then you are so attached to being in it. Now it has become a defilement. So you forget all the other faculties. You forget about mindfulness. You may even forget about the effort. faith, wisdom, but you have given the prominence to the samadhi, concentration, because it is so blissful. So now your goal is to enjoy this blissful state more and more. So this is a wrong approach. So this is where we go wrong. We may start to spend hours in that concentration, and ultimately we ended up in some sort of a craziness even. So this is where we have to be very careful, because these concentration practices are like medicine. So if we are taking overdose, then we get on to various problems. So therefore, when we practice concentration practices, so we have to be very careful, and we have to maintain a balanced approach. And again, some concentrations actually are very powerful, and probably the yogis can even predict what is going to happen in the near future. So and they predict it, and that happens properly, that happens very correctly. And they sometimes then start to give various predictions to the others. So others also approach them, they ask various questions, and these people get on to that high concentration, and then they give various predictions, forecasts. And then your practice completely gone onto a wrong direction. So this is also a defilement. And sometimes you may even discard the sila, the morality and the wisdom, and you are solely targeting or aiming on the concentration. So that is, we are going wrong. And sometimes people start to heal others, and they have this sort of special concentrations now, and using that, so they do some sort of a blessing to another person, and with that the other person get cured. So many other people also start to come in. Now you start a business healing others. So this is where we actually go wrong, because now the practice has gone to a wrong direction. Similarly, sometimes people, when they have very high concentration, they become conceited. So I am having this kind of a concentration. I am a jhana practitioner. I am a vipassana practitioner. The others are not, others don't have any concentration. So likewise, you can develop a lot of ego, a lot of conceit based on concentration. So that is also a defilement. And sometimes people go to very deep concentration and they don't know anything while they are there, almost like a trance, and they simply there. And after hours, they may come out of it. So this is also a completely useless practice. And the mindfulness is extremely weaker, and only the concentration is available, and all other faculties are subsided. So Buddha has mentioned actually five faculties. So time to time it is better to reflect how the other faculties. So the first faculty Buddha mentioned is the faith, saddha. So we have to maintain saddha for a continuous practice. Even though there is no tangible results, still one has to maintain the practice with faith. And the effort also has to be balanced. So it is not kind of an effort that you are maintaining only for a short period and then giving it up. Rather, you have to maintain a balanced effort for many years. So that is the kind of effort that we have to maintain. And then mindfulness. Mindfulness is the one actually monitoring the whole process. So that can never given up. So mindfulness has to be always there, and it also may evolve with our practice. So at the beginning we have to deliberately introduce mindfulness, but later it becomes some sort of an effortless mindfulness. So similarly, we have to take care about the concentration. So at the beginning we have to develop concentration. So at that time it is important to develop concentration. And once it is available, now we have to let it go. Now we have to break the concentration. So it is not the goal of the practice. I mean, concentration is a kind of a tool using which we have to develop vipassana. Now, in order to develop wisdom, so you may have even to break the concentration sometimes. Because If it is true concentration, there are no defilements, though there are no other hindrances arising in the mind, because the concentration has completely suppressed those defilements. So in order for them to come to the surface, you have to relax the mind. You have to loosen the concentration. Then only the certain latent tendencies become active and they come to the surface. Then you can recognize them. Then you can easily uproot them. So likewise, these faculties have to be given sort of proper attention so that you are maintaining proper equilibrium in your practice. So sometimes people have very bright lights and sometimes they attach to that. And sometimes there is a very blissful, pleasurable, elated experience and they attach to that. And sometimes believing that one's method is the only method which is correct, all other methods are wrong. So that kind of a too much attachment, grasping to one's method is also possible. And then sometimes people put too much effort. You are not eating, you are not having enough sleep, and you are not taking care of the body. So you are practicing hours. So that is too much effort. So that is also a defilement. And then sometimes people get too much wisdom. So then they, from the beginning to the end, they start to talk, giving a lot of philosophical explanations, intellectual explanations, and they go into even debates with others because they have gone to an extreme of the wisdom. They couldn't balance the wisdom faculty. So that is also has become a defilement. And then sometimes people have equanimity and they don't have any feelings. They can't have any emotions of the others. I mean, they don't have any empathy towards the others. So they have too much equanimity. So likewise, these qualities, what we are developing, if we are not balancing, then we can get on to these upakkilesas. So especially in the concentration practices, so these are quite possible. So that is why I have mentioned this here, but these are possible even in the other areas, other path factors as well. But especially in the concentration, when one reaches fair amount of concentration, these are possible. And if one is not properly balancing concentration, one can get even conceited, thinking that you have attained jhana, you have attained maggapala, and can have even wrong perceptions, and even start to belittle the teacher even. And you may feel more conceited and you may think, okay, the teacher don't know and he didn't experience this kind of a blissful samadhi at all. I am the one only experiencing this kind of a blissful concentration. So I don't need to listen to him. So he is not to the level of my understanding. So likewise, you can disregard the teacher's instructions, advices. So even to that level, one can come. So these are the sort of pitfalls we can come across in this practice, and especially in the concentration area. So with that warning, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Okay, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So if we have any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can send them to me via chat. So Bhante, I have a question. So you mentioned about being mindful of the most prominent aggregate, but in my personal experience, I feel like in daily life, maybe exactly which aggregate is most prominent is not so clear. It just feels like there's like this cloud of a lot of things that's happening at once, meaning there could be like thoughts, but not any particular thought is prominent in the mind, but you know, like there's thoughts constantly running. There could be feelings, there could be different physical emotion, sensations, emotions, etc. And I just know I'm mindful of it all together, but it's not clear which one I'm exactly mindful of. But I do feel like when I do this, it's like this cloud of everything kind of starts to fall apart, and then both the mind and the body becomes more peaceful, more settled down. So is this adequate from a, you know, daily life perspective, or do we need to, you know, make effort and search for and be able to identify what is actually the most prominent aggregate that's driving all of this happening at once?
Yeah, actually, more and more you recognize that this is the aggregate that I am mostly grasping. So that actually reveals some sort of a trait in our character, in our in ourselves. So that also kind of a good revealing, good understanding, because then we can pay more attention to that trait. Say, for example, as you mentioned, so if you feel that constantly there's a kind of a fearful experience, always kind of an uncertainty. So that is there with everyone, but certain people have that too much, and they can recognize that if they do mindfulness practice, vipassana, and they can actually recognize, okay, this is a, this kind of a always unsafe fear feeling is there. So they can pay more attention to that. So paying more attention to that, recognizing that, is the solution, as you said. So there is no special thing to do. Rather, we have to quickly recognize it. So more and more sharp mindfulness is available, so we can quickly recognize it. So otherwise what happens is, if the mindfulness is weaker, we become overwhelmed by that feeling, that fear, say, example. But when the mindfulness is sharp, so at the very moment it is arising, so we can understand, okay, again the guy is now going to that direction, to that fear. So you can be aware of that. So more and more you are aware of that, then it becomes weaker and weaker. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Renuta to please ask the next question. Can you now unmute?
Tiruvan Chandra Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Bhante, my question, when you were during the Dhamma talk, you said that Buddha to experience all the pleasurable things as painful things, but he is not clinging on to that. What is the state of mind where you don't even clinging on to the pleasurable or painful feelings, and how can we understand that little subtle place, you know? So can you explain a little bit more about that?
I think if one practicing Vedanupassana, so at the beginning there may be some sort of a grasping to the pleasurable feelings that probably one can recognize. Okay, the typical approach is, whenever there are pleasurable feelings, we want to have them more, we want to keep them more, and so likewise that kind of a desire is there. But when we start developing mindfulness, so we start to have a different kind of a perspective. So you can step back and watch it. You are not in that, and you are somewhat away from that, but still you can watch it as a separate person, as a outsider. You can watch it. Now this is where we maintain some sort of a gap, kind of a detached observation into the feelings. So this is why what actually we are continuously developing. So, and when one has developed that enough, then on top of that you understand there is a possibility of maintaining the mind in emptiness, even though body is going through pleasurable feelings.
Yeah.
Similarly, so basically the mind is dwelling on emptiness. It does not. It is not grasping. It is no. There are no thoughts. There is no any tension in the mind, but the body may be going through some painful feeling, pleasurable feelings. So body may going through all these different types of things. So this is the point that
I want to highlight.
Yeah. Okay, but sometimes when we are experiencing a pleasurable feeling, but when you look out as an outsider to that feeling, you realize that feeling ends somewhere.
Yes.
So, when we end that feeling, we have no more feeling for that.
Good, yeah.
Is that what kind of something, something like that? So then it's that emptiness and then it's peacefulness,
yes,
is prevailing.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, that is very correct. So basically, when these pleasurable feelings arise, so we start to experience it. And as you said, when it is passing away, it is reducing. And if we are carefully observing that, so ultimately once it is ceased, so where the mind established is on the emptiness. Because there is nothing more to grasp. What has arisen has already passed away. So we are very well aware of that passing away cycle. And it may plug into the emptiness. There is nothing new has arisen, so the mind remains in that emptiness.
Yeah, the same way it's the painful feeling also.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, painful feelings and again, even a thought, an emotion, whatever, sometimes when something comes prominent, so we can make use of it in order to plunge into the emptiness. So we are observing that emotion, say for example, and we have made a distant from that emotion and now we are observing it. Now it starts to fade away and once it completely disappears, mind lands on the emptiness.
So Bhante, the day-to-day life, you know, when we are doing the meditation, it's easy to do. When we, during the day-to-day life, when we practice that kind of a concentration during our meditation, we can bring that into our day-to-day life and see that if something happens, if something painful happens or something pleasurable happens, that quickly comes into mind, this will fade away. Is that the right way of handling the day-to-day life in that situation, Bhante?
So that understanding is also helpful. It will actually prevent you from grasping. Because when you understand, even though now the body is going through some painful feeling, so this is also impermanent, this also will disappear. So having that understanding in the mind also helpful to maintain that detached approach. And not only that, we can try to maintain the mind in that unassociated, non-clinging, spacious nature as much as possible. And when even though we are trying that, habitually mind go and grasp. So
yeah.
then we recognize it. So then we recognize and release the mind. So that becomes our duty, that becomes our practice. So our goal is to maintain a non-grasping mind. But habitually mind may go and grasp. So that the mindfulness will show us. Then we insert some method, maybe kind of a vipassana practice. Or simply may even observe mindfully. So that may be enough for the mind to return to that emptiness. So it may grow actually. As you know, explained by the Buddha in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so this talent has to be developed. So at the beginning, it may take some time. Say, for example, when you are experiencing some painful feeling, so your mind become agitated, a little unhappy, grasping a little, and likewise, some sort of uneasy state may arise. And then you notice it. And once you are noticing it, then you loosen that grasping and you step back. So it may take some time to completely come to the or return to the non-grasping state. So it has taken some time. But again and again, when you are doing it, Buddha mentioned, you can do it very quickly. Immediately you can return back.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Theruvan Sannai.
Theruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sannai.
Okay, I'd like to invite you to please ask the next question.
Thank you very much. So, Bhante, I just want to go through the way I meditate. Well, I do what you have said in your talk today, but I just watch what arises. I don't sort of try to break it up into feelings, perceptions, and formations as such. I just observe the prakta when I start, and then when I get into the samadhi, I just observe whatever comes up. And for instance, if a pleasant feeling comes up, I just watch it as a pleasant feeling, and it arises and passes away.
Yes.
But I don't actively go searching for the sankhara or whatever.
Yeah.
Mental thoughts.
Yes. So actually, it's only at the training level, at the very beginning, in order to understand the, I mean, in order to apply this theoretical understanding into the practice, we have to do that kind of a little dividing and see whether we also able to do that. But as you said, when we are doing it more and more, so whenever we are aware of various types of feelings, so then we are actually dealing with the feeling aggregate. So unknowingly we are practicing this. So the understanding is there. I mean, when we feel that the feeling is the one now prominent, so that means mostly the feeling aggregate has come to the front and we are dealing with that. So we don't need to go and analyze how the other aggregates are there, because what is prominent has come to the front and we are carefully observing that, and that also start to fade away. Say, for example, there is a kind of an emotion come. Say, you become somewhat excited, become somewhat elated. That also can be observed. Then it may also start to fade away. So likewise, so whenever mind going ups and down, so actually the goal is to maintain a balanced mind which is in the equilibrium. It's very much like the baseline. But time to time, mind go up or down. So that we have to recognize. Okay, when mind is excited, that also we have to recognize and again bring it back to the normal, bring it back to the baseline. When it comes to sort of depressed, that also has to be recognized and again take it back to the normal, that again take it back to the baseline. So this kind of a practice.
Yes, Bhante. Now in the early stages, you see the preeti and, you know, as you say, it's like an excitement, but then naturally, as we go along, it becomes a very peaceful experience,
yes.
which really, I don't actively, as I said, I don't actively look for other sort of thoughts that may arise or not. It's mostly peaceful.
Right.
So,
if they arise only,
situation.
If they arise only, we have to notice.
Yes.
So actually, for the completion and for the explanation, I have explained about the five aggregates. So actually, when we are mindful, we are actually mindful about these aggregates. So unknowingly, we do this. So Buddha has very well explained it so that we can carefully understand it. But so when we start to apply this practice again and again, so it becomes more simple.
Because the process goes quite quick, fast,
exactly.
One after the other, I think, and then you come to this peaceful state.
Correct.
But what is the problem is, as the other lady also sort of mentioned, that in real life, I can't always apply what I experience in my meditation, because it happens so quickly, you know. So, like, for instance, if somebody says something which is upsetting, I get upset. So, but later on, I contemplate, I said, that is because in that instance, I formed a person, myself.
Exactly,
and
yes.
So, yes. So, I analyze it later on, but it's not always possible to do it while it is happening.
Yes. Yes, correct. You are very correct. So it happens to me as well. I mean, whenever we go through the real life situation, sometimes we get upset. So when someone is looking down you, when someone is neglecting you, or sometimes when someone praising you, so you create a self. So as a result of that, you are loosening that you are losing that equilibrium. So again, mind become agitated. So that way we have to recognize mindfully, and then we have to let it go. Even it may be kind of extreme praise, so that we become elated and we become conceited, so that we have to recognize and again come back to the ground. On the other hand, if someone is blaming, hurting, looking down, then we become depressed. That also has to be recognized. We have to recognize, okay, the I was coming to the front, I-ness has there.
Yes.
So that also has to be let go of and come to the ground. So this is the kind of a grounding process. So we always have to refer to this ground level as the more kind of the earthing kind of a thing.
Yes, yes, Bhante. Sometimes it's not easy though. I mean, we try to do our best, obviously, but sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen.
Yes, yes, definitely. It is easy to say than doing.
Yes, yeah. But at least I try to go back then later and
yes.
reflect. At least that's the only way to get better and better.
Yes, definitely. No, thing is the sometimes when we are in the situation, we couldn't do it. I mean, we are being carried away by the situation. But later we understood, okay, I couldn't handle it properly. So I made a mistake. I was not mindful. I become emotional. So likewise, we later feel that I made a mistake. I could have done that. So likewise, so this is how we are actually improving ourselves. So, I mean, the perfect practice is to constantly on guard, and whenever such kind of irritation happen, whenever agitation happen, we immediately notice it and quickly return, quickly recover. So that is the best.
Yes.
But I mean, you can't achieve it immediately. And you can do it for a minor things, but for a certain intense situation, still the mind gets shaken. So
exactly.
Yes. So it is. I mean, this is the practice. I mean, this is why it is called a gradual practice. So we have to slowly develop ourselves.
Yes. Yes, Bhante. That divides against the grain.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
It's against the stream. Yes. So thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Darshika to please ask the next question.
Yes, yes.
About the distant observation, I use my present So distant observation, the mind goes into the empty state. Just want to clarify again. Distant observation, the mind goes into the empty state. And you know that you did the feeling on the power.
Yeah, we can say so. Actually, if it is prominent, it depends on your practice. So even if it is prominent, if you can maintain emptiness, that's also fine. Because it depends on the practice. But certainly, I mean, some are not yet experienced emptiness. So they are still on the level of practicing, on the various feelings, and when they are arising, so you are observing them. You are supposed to observe them. So when you are continuing such practice for a long time, then only you are able to get on to a emptiness. So the emptiness is some sort of happening after long-term recognition of the arising and passing away nature of various phenomena. It may be the element characteristics, may be the feelings, it may be thoughts, emotions, etc., etc. So it's an outcome. So, but So at the beginning, actually, you have to observe whatever the phenomena which are arising. So once you are able to well establish on emptiness, so at that time also there may be intense feelings arise. If possible, you can keep them aside, right, without grasping. I think no problem. Yes, so you have to observe, and once the observation happens, continues, and then you may return back to the emptiness, because the observation is kind of a detachment, because we can't really observe when we are being a subject to that experience. Say, for example, if this is a pleasurable experience, so if we are a victim of that experience, we can't actually do this observation. In order to do this observation, we have to step back, we have to separate ourselves from the experience, and then we can only observe it objectively. Otherwise, it's a very subjective experience. But here, what we are trying to do is a kind of an objective observation. So the experience is there, say the feelings are there, but we take a step back, we become a kind of a distant observer, and then we do the observation. So that actually results into fading away of the feeling, and even if not fading away, you still can have kind of a balanced mind, even though the feelings are still painful.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you are not making any, you are not doing anything intentionally, like you are not hating the painful feeling, you are not cursing someone. So likewise, there are no intentional thoughts or karma we are creating. So rather, we allow it to happen. We allow it to naturally cease.
So that's why
Yeah, correct. Yes. Yeah.
I just wanted to that my understanding was correct.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So I'm sorry, there's another question, but I like to take it on next week, because I have to wind up the session now. So please, Ms. Indira Veerasinghe, please write your question to Jennifer, or you can put the question on next week's session, because I have some other matter to participate. So therefore, I like to conclude today's session here. So thank you very much for all your participation, and we'll share the merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam Sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.